So I have a bit of a difficult task that I have to speak at a time when I separate the devotees from prasadam. So this is generally a difficult time to speak at. You know, devotees are generally very, they're very forgiving, except when you come between the prasadam. So I think in the interest of time, I'll try and be concise. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. Hari Bol. Is it okay? Hari Bol. Okay, so I guess I'll speak louder. So when Guru Maharaj gave me this service, I guess the first thing that went through my mind was that I'm not really qualified to speak about this. So just full disclosure over here, that I'm not the best person to speak about time management, because generally you have to speak, you know, what you practice. And my wife is sitting over here, so she can, she can spend a longer time speaking about my lack of time management than I can speak about time management here. Nityananda Prime Prabhu was talking about how devotees tend to be very euphemistic about terms. So I tend to take, I tend to rest my body quite a bit. And, if I get a task, then, I'll meditate on it a long time. So my wife says it's procrastination, but, I say I'm just meditating on it. So we have the unique ability to, to do everything that we do, we somehow have the ability to, link it to Krishna. One of my favorite one was that, some devotee was going to do some service. And it didn't happen. And I said, "What happened, Prabhu?" And then he used this term I didn't know how to. I forget the term. He said, "I spaced out." He said, "I spaced out." And I said, "In which space were you in?" I said, "Oh, maybe I was in Goloka." So I didn't know how to respond to that. So this is And devotees typically, because they're so busy, time is always a challenge with them. We have this concept of, at least in our Bhakti Riksha, and I have to be real careful because I have some Bhakti Riksha members over here. So, we have this concept of Indian stretchable time, right? And then we have this concept of, ISKCON ultra stretchable time. there's this very fine kind of thing goes on that, the program starts at 7, so there's some kirtan for 15 minutes, there's this, so they'll time it according to that, and come. So time is, it's there in everybody's mind, because it's so precious, and yet it requires so much of effort. And Prabhupada was exemplary in that. So when I was doing a little bit of research on Prabhupada's approach to time, I kind of divided it into three categories. There is the tattva, which is what does the scripture speak, or what do Prabhupada speak about in purports. There is prachar, that what does Prabhupada speak about it in terms of his preaching. And then there is achar, that how did Prabhupada exemplify it in his own life. And as I was doing a little bit more about it, I found out that at least in terms of Prabhupada, the three would eventually converge. And rightly so, because everything that he spoke was based on the scriptures. And then everything that he did, was what he spoke, was based on the scriptures. So there was no gap between his achar and prachar, and there was no gap between the prachar and tattva. But it's interesting for us to note these planes of consciousness in terms of developing our own understanding. So Prabhupada treated time as one of the material resources that was available to him to serve Krishna. So as long as it was, or the aspect of time that was useful in the service of Krishna, he was very, very careful about it. And that aspect of time that was irrelevant, he was completely indifferent to it. So case in point, so question to the audience, how long did it take for Srila Prabhupada to internally accept his Guru Maharaj? It took him a moment. So Prabhupada actually says that I accepted him as my spiritual master immediately. Not officially, but in my heart. I was thinking that I had met a very nice, saintly person. How long did it take Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to instruct Prabhupada? Not even a moment. The first thing that he said when Prabhupada entered was, and I have the quote, "You're educated young men. Why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the whole world?" Now, how long did it take Prabhupada to get initiated by Bhaktisiddhanta? It took him 10 years. So he first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in 1922 in Calcutta. And then he was formally initiated in 1932 in Allahabad. But during that time, so it wasn't like that there was any gap between the two. He was constantly meditating and in his own way serving his Guru Maharaj. In fact, interestingly, when Prabhupada was given initiation, so typically Bhaktisiddhanta would give first initiation. He would give a name for people who were grahasthas or for people who were outside the mat. And Prabhupada was grahastha at the time. But in his case, he gave him both the initiations together on the same day. And people were surprised, but because of the fact that from his perspective, this was a person who was serving him for the last 10 years. Similarly, when Prabhupada was trying to come to America, then many people would deter him. So I was recently reading this book by Mool Prakriti Mataji on the life of Prabhupada before he came to the US. So this was in the 50s and the early 60s. And he was living in Vrindavan. And his mood at the time was very strongly in terms of how can I come to the West and preach. He was preparing himself. And everybody that he would meet would say, "You're too old. And this is time for you to sit down and settle in Vrindavan. People of your age are actually settling in Vrindavan and you're thinking of leaving Vrindavan." But it didn't even register in Prabhupada's mind. You know, for him, age was just a very secondary factor. So when he went to Sumati Morarji, and then she said, "You know, Swamiji, I can't send you to America because you may die over there. You won't get anything to eat. And you may not even make the journey." And so he was communicating to her through her secretary, Mr. Choksi. So he would say something to him, he would go back. And then Prabhupada says that Prabhupada didn't even understand what he was speaking. He said, "What old?" So, you know, it didn't, so the age was completely irrelevant to him. So in that perspective, time did not really matter. But time mattered a lot when he was using it in the services of Krishna. So as Prabhu was saying, his accomplishments, they're phenomenal. Traveling around the world 14 times, you know, preaching to thousands of disciples. And a lot of investment of personal energy in building so many temples. You know, Prabhupada was everything. If you look at it from a material perspective, he was the CEO of a multi-million dollar, at the peak, ISKCON was collecting $60,000 every day. So he was the CEO of a multi-million dollar multinational organization in which the employees did not get paid. Can you imagine? So, you know, you set up an organization like that, and you know, and you open up your recruitment booths, how many people will come, you know, say, I need this job? And people were lining up to join. And ISKCON was expanding by leaps and bounds. At one point, Prabhupada said that my problem earlier on was that I did not have sufficient funds. Now my problem is that I should use them sufficiently well in Krishna's service. So he bought it in a very short span. He bought it from this point to that. And Prabhupada, of course, you know, he had many qualities, but one of them, that because of the relevance to the topic, is his ability to manage time. So I have four important aspects of Prabhupada in terms of time management that I'd like to share with you. And I may or may not get the time to go through all four of them. So we'll see till wherever we reach, and I'll leave some time for discussion after that. So first was conviction. That in the heart of Prabhupada was this rock-solid conviction that the only one purpose of existence, the only one purpose of time is to use it in the service of Krishna. So conviction is very important. In one of the purports in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that if you do something without conviction, it is rituals. And the nature of rituals is that they will either become dogmatic or they will morph into something that is materialistic. So Prabhupada had this very strong conviction, and from the perspective of tattva, so I just want to quote Prabhupada's purport. So this is to Madhya Leela 2262. Firm faith and confidence are called Shraddha. When one engages in Lord's devotional service, he is to be understood to have performed all his responsibilities in the material world. He has satisfied his forefathers, honorary living entities, and demigods, and is free from all responsibility. Such a person does not need to meet his responsibilities separately. It is automatically done. So we tend to checkerboard our time in trying to meet our millions of responsibilities. But here is that conviction, that if you're using our time in the service of Krishna, everything is automatically met. There is nothing that is really separate from the service to Krishna. In the teachings of Queen Kunti, Prabhupada says, a devotee should be very much careful to see whether his time is being spent unnecessarily. He should ask himself, am I now engaged in Maya service or Krishna's service? So there are only two choices. Either you're serving Krishna or you're serving Maya. Either you're making spiritual advancements or you are moving back in spirituality. These are the only two situations. This is the symptom of an advanced devotee. Namagane sadaruchi. Such a devotee is never tired of chanting, singing or dancing. Sada means always and ruchi means taste. So a devotee should always have a taste for chanting Hare Krishna. So in terms of prachar, this was one of the key topics that Srila Prabhupada spoke about over and over again. I was talking to one of Prabhupada's disciples in Potomac, and he was sharing a little bit about the older days. And he said that Prabhupada would instill in the people this strong sense of urgency, that you have to go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. So he said that everybody had this sense of a mission, that we are working somehow or the else to make this our last lifetime. So he was kind of reflecting the fact that sense of urgency is is diminishing over time. And he was talking how to again revive that sense of that sense of urgency. In terms of his own practice, Prabhupada's life is more or less an open book, and we see that how he demonstrated this conviction about using time in the service of Krishna. So there's a conversation, and there are so many things in a limited time, but the reason I picked it is it's a little bit funny. So this is by one of the publishers who worked with Prabhupada before he came to America. So the name of this publisher is Hit Saran Sharma. So he says that Swamiji was going hither and thither. He was getting whatever collections he could get and depositing them, and he was always mixing with many persons, going hither and thither. With me, he was very fond. I should do everything as soon as possible. He had a great haste. He used to say, time is going, quick, do it. He would be annoyed with me also, and he would always have me do his work first. But I was in the service of the Dalmia, and I would tell him, your work has to be secondary for me. But he would say, now you have wasted my 2 days. What is this, Sharmaji? I am coming here, I told you in the morning to do this, and you have not done it even now. But I would reply, I have got no time during the day. Then he would say, then you have wasted my complete day. So he was very much pressing me. That was his temperament. So that was Prabhupada's nature, that he had this conviction that whatever time that was available should be fully used in the service of Krishna. So the lesson to us is that somehow we have to also develop this sense of urgency. We have to develop this sense of conviction that the time that we have is only valuable if it is used in the service of Krishna. And how do we do it? We do it with associating with people who have that conviction. Prabhupada would say that if a thief wants to become an expert thief, he'll hang around with other thieves. And they basically talk about how to pick locks and whatever thieves talk about. So if you have to develop this sense of conviction, we really cannot get it by reading. That would help, but we can't really get it in the heart. It may be gyan, but not vigyan. But when we see and when we observe, like when Guru Maharaj comes and lives in our house, then for a few days after that, our chanting is really good, because we see, the way 24/7 he's absorbed. He gets up in the morning, chants his round, he's on the phone, while he's honoring prasadam, he's listening to Prabhupada. He's completely saturated his life with devotional service. As Prabhu was saying, we are obstinate, but there's a little bit of a push. And then, by the time he comes back, the next time we're back to status quo, so we have to again, come back. But just by associating with people who have this sense of conviction, we can absorb that mood. The second quality that Prabhupada demonstrated was not wasting a single moment in anything but Krishna's service. So this phrase of not wasting a single moment is called avyartha kalatvam, and it is used very often by Prabhupada. It actually appears in Chaitanya Charitamrita as a quality of a devotee who is reaching an advanced stage of asakti or ruchi at that stage. So one of the qualities that such a devotee demonstrates is that there is concern in him that time should not be wasted. So this was something that Prabhupada spoke elaborately about. In the Madhya Lila 23-22, he says, Krishnadas Kaviraj says that not a moment should be wasted. Every moment should be utilized for Krishna or connected with him. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that Maharaj Parikshit's expression of anxiety is explained in this verse. He says, let whatever is destined to happen take place. It doesn't matter. Just let me see that not a moment of my time is wasted without a relationship with Krishna. One has to tolerate all obstacles on the path of Krishna consciousness. One has to see that not a moment of life is wasted outside of Krishna's service. So this was a little bit in terms of tattva. In terms of prachar, Giriraj Maharaj actually he quotes Prabhupada. When Prabhupada was having a conversation with a businessman in Bombay, Prabhupada quoted a verse from Chanakya Pandit, and he says, at the time of death, one cannot purchase one more moment of life even for all the riches in the world. So we should utilize each moment for the greatest gain. In the ledger of your life, all time engaged in Krishna consciousness is profit, while all time engaged in material activities is loss. If we want the greatest profit in life, we have to use every moment in Krishna consciousness. So in a there are many. This was one of the favorite topics of Prabhupada, of using of not wasting time, because if you look at the interactions of Prabhupada with the disciples, when the disciples will come to Prabhupada saying that I'm having this challenge, that challenge, very quickly he would get the conversation to how are you spending your time, and very quickly to where are you wasting time. So many places Prabhupada has spoken about it. In a lecture in Hawaii, Prabhupada says that whether this moment, therefore here it is said that those who are Krishna conscious must weigh and measure every moment, whether the moment has been spent without Krishna consciousness. That is the criteria of avyatha kalatva. This is the test of advanced Krishna consciousness. So once Prabhupada was, this was shared by Govinda Mataji, once Prabhupada was in New Jersey on the beach, and so many things Prabhupada saw for the first time in America, so he was very curious. So he saw that there were people who were surfing, and he hadn't seen, so he asked what's going on. So somebody started explaining that whatever they do, they have a paddle, they go into the water. So then Prabhupada looked for some time, and then he said, this is not surfing, this is suffering. So they're just wasting time going into the water. He said, you know what will happen to them? And he said, what? He said, they'll get a body of a fish. But they're so keen to go into the water and spend all the time there, that's what will happen. At another time, I don't have the full details, but I heard it from somebody, that Prabhupada was, I believe this was in LA, and he went by a golf place, and then he said, what are these men doing? So, you know, explaining golf is really strange, that, you know, that people take a stick and hit a ball in a small hole. So the person was trying to explain golf, and Prabhupada said, you know, so they were old men, and he said, this is how they spend their life. And it was, you know, his voice almost cracked. He became so sad that this is how they're spending their life. So he was very much he was very much in this mood that it's like wasting gold, that you have time that you can use to serve Krishna, and then you're serving it, you know, you're using it elsewhere. So himself in his achar, Prabhupada's day was filled one way or the other with service to Krishna. So I was reading one of the transcendental diaries by Hariswari Prabhu, and then he has the schedule of Srila Prabhupada over there. So Hariswari Prabhu was very, very meticulous, even though he was with Prabhupada for just a few years, but he was very meticulous in taking notes. If you look at his diaries, he has it almost down to at this hour, this minute, to this hour, this happened. So it's really gives a very close view of Prabhupada's life. And when I was looking at it, then I noticed that Prabhupada would only sleep for 2 hours. He would go to sleep at around a little after between 11 and midnight, Within 2 hours, he would get up, and then he would do his translation and chanting after that. And then morning, he would then take a bath and then go to the temple, and then his day would start after that. So over the day, he would take rest sometimes, depending on the schedule. He would spend about an hour taking rest over the day. But his entire day was filled with either preaching or translation or chanting. You know, Prabhupada also had this ability that because so much of his time was spent talking to people, so he had this ability of getting the conversation to Krishna very quickly. So people would come with their own agendas, people would come, you know, a lot of people were dignitaries, and they would, you know, they had strong opinions, and Prabhupada would quickly bring the conversation over to Krishna. So I have this conversation which is like a, again, it's a, like kind of a humorous conversation. So this is with a Dr. Tiwari, who is a famous biologist from UCLA. So Prabhupada says, so biology means the scientist dealing in living entities. So Dr. Tiwari says, right, Prabhupada. So I don't think your science has reached to the point to find out the measurement of the living entity. So Dr. Tiwari says, well, that is true. So now you see Prabhupada gets it to the scriptures. He says, but we get information that there is a measurement. Keshagrashata bhagasya. So then he quotes the verse in which it said that the soul is the tip of a hair divided 100 times and 100 times over. So he says, then he turns to Dr. Tiwari and he says, how far do you agree with this? So now Dr. Tiwari is kind of, you know, he's laughing, he doesn't know what to say. He says, I don't know what you mean by that. But of course, it is very true that we do not know much about life. And the scientists are the first to agree that we know very little. And Prabhupada says, that is a real scientist. So the lesson to us from this is, Prabhupada would say that an idle brain is a devil's workshop. So nothing really happens by accident. Everything, if you look at the material endeavors, everything that we have acquired is because of planning. We thought about it, we planned. So similarly, spirituality is not something that will, you know, it's not like there's a joke about a lazy person who's sitting under a mango tree with his mouth open in hoping a mango will fall. So it's not going to happen like that. The Prabhupada would say that, you know, the day, a day that is well spent is a day that is well planned. So we need to somehow or the else plan our day in a way that we are consciously able to fill it with Krishna conscious activities. And then everything else automatically gets marginalized. So one of my friends, he had a lawn which had a lot of weeds in it. And he would constantly try to, you know, to get the weeds out, which didn't work. So finally he hired a professional, and things, you know, his lawn was booming. So then he asked, what did you use? What kind of weed killer did you use? And he said, I didn't use a weed killer. I just oversaturated the lawn with grass seeds. And the grass basically choked the weeds out. So we have so many, we have so many activities that we do that are like weeds. They take roots and then they perpetuate. But if we saturate our life with Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada has given us so many ways to do that. We can hear, we can chant, we can read, we can serve the deities, we can preach, there's so many activities that we can do. So depending on our propensity or our the circumstance, that automatically they will choke the weeds out. Third thing is prioritization. So that is the art of accomplishing by sequencing. And in terms of tattva, Prabhupada uses Amrish Maharaj as an example. That Amrish Maharaj, he was the emperor of the world. So his job description was much more elaborate than any one of ours. He was managing the whole world. And he was still able to completely use his life in Krishna consciousness. In terms of prachar, this is again an excerpt from Giriraj Maharaj sharing Prabhupada's stories. So I think a lot of you may have heard it, the example about a jar that needs to be filled. So there's rocks and there's pebbles, there is sand and there is water. And if you put in the rocks first, then there is space for the pebbles to go in. And after the pebbles go in, there is space for the sand. And after the sand goes in, there is space for the water. So if you do things in the right sequence, they all fit in. But if you put in the sand first, then it's not going to work. Or if you put in the water first, it's not going to work. So Prabhupada, in terms of achar, he really was an expert in this art of prioritization. So the core activities of chanting and translation, Prabhupada would do during a time that there was not much of disturbance. He would do it at night time, or he would make sure that he would not be disturbed, and then he would plan his day out. So one thing interesting is that Prabhupada did not do a lot of multitasking. That whatever he did that single task fully present. When he was chanting, he was just chanting. When he was, I was thinking about it actually when I was driving over to Gita Nagari, because I was chanting while I was driving. And I was thinking that this is probably not the best way to chant. And even though Prabhupada would chant all the time, but his core rounds he would chant, you know, when he was chanting. Many times when Prabhupada's disciples would come to him and talk about their challenges, so they would say, "Prabhupada, I have too much service to do. I cannot do this. I cannot do that." And Prabhupada would reprioritize the services. But one thing that he would refuse to have the disciples let go was chanting. You know, he would say that at one point he went to one of his disciples. He said that you give up your service, but not your chanting. And the reason, of course, is that the impetus for doing the service we get from our chanting. Because one time I was having this discussion with a devotee, saying that we chant. Why do we chant? We chant to get service. So when we get service, then that's the fruit of chanting. It's a little bit of circular logic. So, when we chant, that's the fruit. When we get service, that's the fruit of chanting. So we have already acquired the fruit of chanting, so what's the need to chant anymore after that? So sometimes devotees think like that, but this, he was mostly, it was a discussion. But the matter of fact is that the impetus for us to chant, when we execute a service, we get the impetus to chant, and when we chant, we get the impetus to execute the service. So if any of these two break, then the cycle is broken. So the last one, how long do I have? This is still 12:15. Okay. So the last one that I have is regulation. 12:45. Okay. So I have some time for questions. So the last one that I have is regulation. So regulation has two connotations to it. Regulation, one is submitting to the rules and regulation. And the second is in terms of practice, regulating one's life. So in terms of tattva, Prabhupada, in the commentary purport on 6:16, he says, "Regulation of diet and sleep is recommended herein for the yogis. Too much eating means eating more than is required to keep the body and soul together. There is no need for men to eat animals because there is an ample supply of grains, vegetables, fruits and milk. Such simple foodstuff is considered to be in the mode of goodness according to the Bhagavad Gita." Then he says, "It is best that one eat only the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna. A person in Krishna consciousness does not eat anything which is not offered to Krishna. Therefore, only in Krishna consciousness Only the Krishna conscious person can attain perfection in yoga practice. Then in terms of sleeping, he says that one should not sleep more than 6 hours daily. One who sleeps more than 6 hours out of 24 hours is certainly influenced by the mode of ignorance. A person in the mode of ignorance is lazy and prone to sleep a great deal. Such a person cannot perform yoga. So he's talking about sleeping, not taking rest. Different thing. Yeah. So devotees were often, just in terms of regulation, Prabhupada did, discuss inspire his disciples to use more time in service and less in sleeping. So there's actually a conversation with Malati Mataji on this topic. So Prabhupada is asking her, how many hours are you sleeping? So Malati Mataji says about 6 to 8 hours. Prabhupada says, that is not much. So this is a conversation, so there are breaks in it. It takes only 2 hours, 16 rounds, huh? 2 hours or more than that? Malati Mataji, 2 hours is all that it takes for me to do the rounds. So the background of this is Malati Mataji saying that she is not able to do her 16 rounds. Prabhupada, so you have to spend 2 hours for Krishna out of 24 hours. So one of the devotees says, is there something wrong with sleeping 8 hours? Prabhupada, sleeping and eating, this is a material disease. Sleeping, eating, mating. So they should be reduced as much as possible. Devotee 1, if you are still tired, no, you can sleep until you are refreshed. Somebody is refreshed by sleeping 4 hours. Somebody is refreshed by sleeping 10 hours. So here he is making an allowance for one's personal constitution. So Malati Mataji says, but we should not sleep when we have in place of our devotional service. Prabhupada, no, of course not. Devotional service is first. Malati Mataji, so if we miss some sleep, we should do it. Prabhupada, we should forego sleeping even. The real regulated life is that if 16 rounds is not completed, then we have to forego sleeping. You should take out hours from sleeping. The main thing is that we should always be careful. And then he goes on to say something. And then one of the other devotees later on says, but sometimes if we sleep less, we can do more for Krishna. But at the same time, we feel very tired. How can we regulate that? And Prabhupada says, practically, so this is the other aspect of regulation. He says, practically, everything depends on practice. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetesha nanya gamena. Abhyasa yoga. Abhyasa yoga means yoga practice. Practice it. So this whole Krishna consciousness movement is to practice transforming from one kind of consciousness to another. So we require practice. Just like one man can run few miles. I can't even run 1 mile. He has practiced. We see some boys, they run. They practice. Strength of the heart increasing by practice. And if I run, my heart is palpitating because I have no practice. So by practice, everything can be attained. So in terms of regulation, Prabhupada was very, very strong in terms of submitting to the rules and regulation. So it is through this submission that we get the So in a way, that is why we are called sadhakas, because we are practicing. That when we get initiated, we are initiated into this practice. So everything is practice. And the root of this practice comes from our willingness to submit to it. So Prabhupada is making these 2 points over here. That we submit to the regulation and we practice it. So Brajbhari Prabhu was once sharing an anecdote that Prabhupada was once, he was writing late at night, and then he rang his bell. So Prabhupada generally would have a servant to attend to his needs. So then it so happened that at that time, the servant was sleeping. So Prabhupada rang his bell a few times and finally got up, and then Prabhupada said, "Why are you so late?" So the disciple said, "I was sleeping." And then Prabhupada said, "Why are you sleeping?" And he said, "Prabhupada, I'm tired." So then Prabhupada said, "But I'm not sleeping. Why are you sleeping?" So then the disciple said, "But Prabhupada, I'm not a Paramahansa." So then Prabhupada said, "Why are you not a Paramahansa? Become a Paramahansa." So that was the mood of Prabhupada. He was chastising, but he actually wanted, and he says that at many times, he actually wanted his disciples to do what he showed in his life. Now, of course, Prabhupada was at a different level. Most of us cannot get by with just 2 hours of sleep. He was surviving on pure spiritual energy. But yet, from the tattva, from the achar, and from the prachar, whatever he has given to us, it is explicitly his gift to us. He has spoken about it, he has explained it, and he has demonstrated it. And why? Only for our benefit. So there were some, in terms of time, there were some mystic elements also that Prabhupada demonstrated. So this was shared by Naraini Mataji, a quote from Prabhupada. So Prabhupada says that for 12 years, if one goes to Mangal Arati every day, if one chants 16 rounds every day, and if one follows the four regulative principles sincerely, then anything that the person will say comes true. So this is a benediction that Prabhupada has given us. And Prabhupada would not try to show a lot of mysticism, because it would bewilder people. But it sometimes came through in Leelamrita. It said that Prabhupada, he was once sitting next to a toll collector, Mr. Rubin. And then, so he was a friendly person, Mr. Rubin, so he was asking Prabhupada, what do you do? And then Prabhupada told him that, I have many temples, I have many disciples, I have many books that are published all over the world. And the interesting thing is that this conversation, it happened in 1965. So this was, Prabhupada was just new to America. So then Prabhupada says that the only thing that separates us is time. So Prabhupada had this ability to see across time. And it's the nature, so this is one of the siddhis that devotees get, because as they get more and more closer to Krishna, so they also acquire the qualities of Krishna. So just like Krishna is Trikalagya, the devotees also get that quality. One time, this is something that I heard, I couldn't find the reference, but I heard it from a fairly authoritative source, that Prabhupada was, I believe, in LA, and he had to crash a flight. So the airport was like 15 minutes from the temple, but an hour before that, Prabhupada started saying that, "Let's go to the airport." And the disciples said that, "Prabhupada, it's just 15 minutes." And Prabhupada said, no, let's go. So they said, okay, so Prabhupada wants it. So they took, and when they were on the way back, they found out that just after they left, on the road there was a huge accident, and the road was closed down. So they had left on the time that they were planning to leave, they could have never made it there. Personally, we are really not, after all, mysticism, if it comes, it comes, one uses it in Krishna's service, but it's, even though the ability to, whatever you say comes true, it's, it's an interesting ability. So, but, our meditation should be that we have this valuable human form of life in which we are able to use this opulence of time in the service of Krishna. In the 11th chapter, Krishna tells Arjun, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain." So the nature of time is that it can either kill us or it can liberate us. The choice is ours. If you use it in the service of Krishna, then it becomes the cause of our liberation. If you use it in our own service, then it becomes our own death. So that's why Krishna says, why does he say with the exception of Pandavas? Because the Pandavas were devotees and they were using the time in the service of Krishna. So he said, with the exception of you, time for the others will be the cause of their death. And we have this unique good fortune to be instructed in the proper use of time by Prabhupada and his disciples. So I wanted to conclude over here with one last thought, that what would please Srila Prabhupada the most? A disciple of Prabhupada once asked him, "What pleases you the most?" And then he was expecting to get a reply like, "If you distribute my books." So after a brief and thoughtful pause, Srila Prabhupada said, "If you love Krishna." At another time, he said, "You may please me the most by reading my books and following my instructions therein, and by becoming fully Krishna conscious in this very lifetime." And then finally, in his most merciful mood, Prabhupada says that by desiring to please me, you are pleasing me. So if we just meditate, really meditate, not procrastinate, but really meditate, that how can we please Krishna? That itself is pleasing to Krishna, because when it's done with sincerity, then everything else follows through automatically. So I'll stop over here and see if you have any discussions, comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, I heard that Srila Prabhupada received that instruction in 1922 to, go to the English-speaking world, and we see that it's about 1965, is like about 43 years from the time he received the first instruction. So do I understand that as he preparing himself, or how do we understand that? Like such a vast, because usually, my expectation is I should, quickly do something. So I just want to understand that with the right perspective.
Right. So actually, everybody was able to hear the question? Yeah? So in Leela Amrita, actually, Satsuru Maharaj speaks about that. And he talks specifically what you were saying, that one should understand that Prabhupada's life was in preparation to executing the instruction of his Guru Maharaj. And then if you look at everything that he did, you can actually draw a parallel to it. Because when Prabhupada came to America, he had to do everything. He was managing, he was cooking, he was singing, he was doing kirtan, he was preaching, he was like a, one-man show. Everything he was doing himself. And everything you see over his life, how he trained himself in each and every thing. Almost 15 years before he came, he started translating books in English. And people would ask him, in that book by Mool Prakriti Mataji, that, you know, people ask him that, why are you translating in English? And then he says, for the Western speaking people. And he was also training himself that way. So he was, so the instruction was there in his heart, and through the meditation on that instruction, he was actually bringing his life to the point where he could execute it. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. My question is regarding procrastination. Can you help me change my thing wherein I'm procrastinating? I mean, I'm supposed to chant, but at the same time, I just think that I will do it later. And I might do something in connection to Krishna, but it is not the thing that is supposed to be done now. Like, I procrastinate what is important and do something else that might have been done later. Mm. So, can you help me see what is my problem and fix that issue right there?
Mm-hmm. I can share with you a little bit, you know, what I do is, at least there are one or two things that I kind of anchor as things that I would not like to move. And sometimes they do because of different reasons, but chanting and reading, I think these are two things that I try not to move. And, you know, once you're kind of in that conception, then slowly things start building around it. Having deities, do you have deities in your house? So having deities helps a lot in regulating your life. Because, you know, deities, they demand to be worshipped at a certain time. And, you know, and of course, Prabhupada said that deities or grihasthas are much more flexible. But just the fact that you have deities, you know, you have to develop a certain kind of regulation. So fixing a time for the deities, that, you know, that helps. That if you have to do aarti at a certain time, or if you have to, you know, offer them bhoga at a certain time, that helps. Yeah? Yes, Sampad Prabhu. Maybe to the mic.
So regarding the sleep time, so I understood few things around it, so I could use some help in trying to work on it. So one is about the, when we sleep for longer time, there's an indication that we're more influenced by mode of ignorance. And second thing I heard in that connection is about Abhyasa Yoga. You mentioned by practice we can do anything. So how do we, what can I do to reduce, is it by just purification that I can get to that, and purification along with practice?
Well, first of all, you know, Prabhupada gave us, so there's a trick that Prabhupada gave us, by which we can convert sleeping into devotional service. So does anybody know that trick? Okay, I think so. You know, Prabhupada's disciples probably know that. So Prabhupada would have his disciples read the Krishna book before sleeping. So when they would sleep, they would dream about Krishna. And so in a way, the sleeping became devotional service because it's still connected to Krishna. So, so reading before sleeping, it helps a lot. And, you know, if you have difficulty sleeping, you can read Bhagavatam. So, you know, that also helps. Especially the third, if you read the third canto, you know, you can do. On a serious note, but if you plan, this is something that Guru Maharaj shares, that if you plan ahead, it helps a lot. So if you sleep at time, you know, you have a time, 9 o'clock, 8:30, 9:30, and so when you sleep in time, you'll get up in time. So that happens. Not taking a heavy meal before sleeping. Yeah, that helps. Keeping, so as per Ayurveda, they say that at least keeping 1 hour of gap between the last meal and going to sleep. And, you know, and then finally, you could, for a while I was doing it, that, you know, I would have some kirtan start off it in the morning at a certain time. So, you know, instead of having the, you know, the buzz of the alarm, you can have kirtan going. So it's a nice way to get up. So core of it is just planning and practice, these two. Yeah? Okay. So somebody over here wanted to... Yes, Prabhu.
Before I come to Krishna consciousness, time has been referred as Kala Bhairava to me, and now we have like Panchabhutas has been referred like in so many places in Bhagavad Gita. So is there is any reference that like for that time, is it something like it's like a demigod or like how we should see that like just before... I missed a little bit of your class. You mentioned that Krishna itself, he's the time by himself, right? So, actually, what is time, Prabhu? Like, I'm trying to understand that.
Okay, so I'm not sure if there's a demigod controlling time. Maybe it's Yamraj who controls time. Not sure about that. But first of all, time is material. So it's there in the material world. It's not there in the spiritual world. In the form that, in the material world, time is the cause of destruction. So there's no destruction in the time is still there in the spiritual world, but there it is in the service of Krishna. So one thing is that the time in the form that we know is material. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it says that when the Pradhan is there, then all the elements are there, but everything is static. Nothing is moving. And then Krishna, he injects the element of time. So when the element of time is injected along with the living entities, then the Pradhan is agitated and the material world comes into existence. So everything that... So the singular truth in the material world is the fact that everything is getting destroyed. Prabhupada would say this, that... why do we call it a birthday? It's actually a death day. He says when somebody is 2 years old, the person has actually died for 2 years. And when a person is born, he actually begins to die at that time. And the Bhagavatam, it said that every breath that you take, it pulls you one breath closer to your end. So, at least in the material conception, that is what time is. It is the platform on which all activities are perform. It is the platform on which the cycle of birth, death goes on and on. And when we are able to use it in the service of Krishna, then it becomes conspicuous by its absence. So I'm not sure if I was able to fully answer your question.
Somewhat, Prabhu, what I understood, it's not God. That's what I understood, but it is like a part of one of the elements that Krishna embeds, like for every creature or anything that bonds in this world, right?
Yes, yes. It's a material element.
It's a material element. It's not a spiritual thing.
Right.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, as you were mentioning about developing an intense desire for going back to Godhead, so I was wondering, as we increase our devotional practice, or as we engage more and more in devotional services, does this intensity increases gradually, or it become irrelevant? Because in one sense we can see it as a, you know, motive also for behind the devotional service.
One way we can see it as what?
As a motive, because you know it's also sort of expectation to be free from the material miseries. So as we, you know, as our intensity for the devotional service increases, does the propensity or does the intensity for going back to Godhead increases, or it becomes irrelevant for us?
Well, you know, our desire for devotional, so the, you know, the part of wanting liberation from miseries, it's there in the initial stages of devotion. You know, one may take to devotion, so that is called Mishrit Bhakti, Sakam Bhakti. That one may take to devotion with some desires, and one of them is moksha. And as one executes devotional service, one gets purified by it. So in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's said that one of the symptoms of devotion is moksha lagu akrakt, that one begins to deride the conception of liberation. So that particular desire to get liberated, that becomes irrelevant. So in that way, what you're saying is right. But I think there is another aspect to your question is, that does the drive to execute devotionals, what happens to the drive to execute devotional service? So that intensifies. You know, the desire to serve Krishna, that intensifies. But it becomes more centered around Krishna. As opposed to, should I get liberation or should I get free freedom from miseries, the focus changes. Right? So thank you very much. I appreciate you sitting here and giving me a patient hearing. And please give me all your blessings so that I can manage my time better. Vancha kalpatarubhyesha kripa sindhubhyesha patitanam pavanebhyo.